Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we're talking about how to calm down. Maybe you need to bring your heart rate down after a couple of heated Thanksgiving debates. Or maybe you're generally feeling a little anxious because of the state of the world. Either way, we're here for you. Lifehacker writer Nick Douglas and I chat with Dr. Craig Richard, author of Brain Tingles and founder of the ASMR University.
You can just be watching a video on YouTube created by these ASMR artists, and you can just get this deep feeling of relaxation just suddenly wash over you with these pleasurable brain tingles.
And because it's not only adults who lose their cool, Lifehacker staff writer Beth Skorecki gives us 5 ways to stop a child's temper tantrum.
Kids have tantrums when they're stressed out and overwhelmed, and they don't know how to deal with everything that's going on.
But first, Alice and I are going to share our favorite songs for when we need to calm the fuck down. Before we get started this week, we wanted to invite you to the very first live recording of The Upgrade. The theme is How to Fail, and we'll be at the Bell House in Brooklyn on November 29th.
We're going to have comedian Chris Gethard, comedian Achille Hughes, and the hosts of Gimlet's The Nod, Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings.
It costs $10, and you can get tickets at thebellhouseny.com. Alice, what do you do when you need to calm down?
I have so much lavender in my home right now. I'm like, I've got the lavender aromatherapy balm. I've got the lavender candles, lavender essential oil diffuser. My shampoo is lavender. Everything is just, my hand soap, it's getting to be ridiculous. I love it.
I totally agree with you. I have also started diffusing lavender oil in my apartment. And you know that I have that lavender spray that I spray on myself before bed. I really do think it's calming. I can see how it's not for everybody. Mm. I don't generally like floral scents. I don't generally find them calming. But lavender, if it's the right lavender and not that...
Gotta be the right lavender.
You know what I'm about to say.
I do.
Not that Mrs. Meyer's lavender soap, which smells like cloves.
Does not smell like lavender.
It's not going to calm you down.
Fraud.
It's going to make you
enraged. Make you angry.
It's going to make you write a sternly worded letter.
Yeah.
But I listen to music. You know, I think I listen to music to change my mood all the time, you know, to bring myself up if I'm feeling down, but mostly to calm myself down or to sort of quiet my mind. What do you listen to when you are so amped up because of some injustice in the world or some news briefing you just heard that has made your blood boil?
I listen to the screaming in my head mostly. How about you?
I listen to the screaming in your head as well. It's dark in there.
It's real dark. It's real dark. I do have a playlist that we used for years for when my son needed to get to sleep, and it's very, very soothing, I will admit. How about you?
As I tried to come up with songs for my calm down playlist, I realized that everything I listen to could be on a calm down playlist. Like, I have been listening to easy listening my entire life, I think. I just have gravitated to it. So I chose a selection of songs, and I realized... And I only like to listen to, like, now middle-aged, but when they recorded the songs, probably, you know, 20 to 30-something white men singing sensitively about ridiculous frippery. So the first song that I chose is called The Trapeze Singer by Iron and Wine.
I'm going to cross that one off my list.
Really?
I feel like we're going to have all the same songs.
Well, if you don't have many, I can give you that one. Oh, no, let's agree on it.
Yeah, let's agree.
chose that song because it's long and mesmerizing, but really anything by Iron and Wine brings me right on down. It's all one long song with Sam Beam, the guy.
Yeah.
Right. Hit me.
Okay. One of my favorites is a song called Zungo by Nina Simone. The Live at the Village Gate version, though, because she's got another version, which is very energetic, but it's almost like a lullaby. It might even be a lullaby. It's a cover of an African song, and I don't know the provenance of it, but it's really beautiful.
So, continuing with the theme, the artist Mark Kozelek has performed under many different names. When I was young, he was Red House Painters, and really, again, just the most depressing yet sort of like, let's wallow in it and feel the pain and appreciate the beauty of this and then come out the other side feeling sort of renewed, like after the rain. So I chose a Red House Painter song from the last album that he recorded under that name, which is called Old Ramon, and the song is Kavita.
Hello, Kavita. When can I see ya?
And then in later years, he's been going under the moniker Sun Kill Moon. These are crazy names. And I really love the song Carissa from the album Benji.
Oh, Chris, when I first saw you, you were a lovely child. And the last time I saw you, you were 15 and pregnant and running wild.
Carissa has some things in common, I think, with the trapeze singer in that it kind of keeps repeating a similar melody and it's telling a story that is at once interesting and inconsequential.
Hmm. You love frippery.
I do. Although I have to say that Sun Kill Moon's songs tend to be more consequential.
Yeah.
Like they're actually talking about, you can imagine there's somebody's, you know, legitimate, urgent diary entry.
So one of my favorite artists is Laura Mvula, and I chose her song Sing to the Moon because it's just a beautiful song. And it kind of always makes me feel like winter is upon us and it's like the darkness is here, but it's beautiful and everything's cold and clear. I don't know. There's something very Christmassy about it, even though it's not a Christmas song.
But it calms you?
It does calm me.
Sing to the moon.
My last selection is by the original Sad Young Men, Simon and Garfunkel.
Sure.
It's unoriginal, but I always come back to them. They are super duper soothing.
Yeah.
And so I really take any song by them that isn't like Cecilia or one of their upbeat ones, which, you know, is calming in its own right. I love Homeward Bound. I love April Come She Will.
Sure.
I love Bookends. I love it all. The Concert in the Park. Just,
yeah,
you know, lie back in the grass. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was. Homeward bound.
So here's a song that was on Henry's Falling Asleep playlist that I cannot listen to because it will just make me cry. But for anybody else, I highly recommend it.
Is it called Twinkle Twinkle Little Star?
No, it's Willie Nelson singing The Rainbow Connection.
Oh, God.
He does a very nice version of it. It's very heartfelt, but oh man, it'll just bring on the tears.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side?
I think we have enough songs here that if people were to go to the Spotify playlist we have created in the show notes at lifehacker.com/the show. And if in Spotify they chose to listen to Playlist Radio, they would get a panoply of songs in the same vein as these.
Nice.
So use these as like your sourdough starter for a calm down playlist.
Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And now it's time for the interview, where we interview someone. This week, Nick Douglas and I chat with Dr. Craig Richard about the growing field of ASMR. ASMR stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, those deeply relaxing, blissful head tingles that some people get from certain sounds, images, and sensations.
Dr. Richard is one of the leading experts in this mysterious field. In 2014, he launched the ASMR Research Project with Carissa Burnett and Jennifer Allen, as well as the ASMR University. And he recently wrote a book called Brain Tingles, The Secret to Triggering Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response for Improved Sleep, Stress Relief, and Head-to-Toe Euphoria.
I don't know about you, Nick, but I know about ASMR from these YouTube videos in which women like act out a scene of cutting hair and they talk mm-hmm. into a microphone closely and their voice sort of cracks a little.
They're crinkling paper yeah. and tapping on a Coke can.
Yeah, and I probably read an article about it. Craig, can you explain to us what ASMR is?
ASMR stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. And it's something that is definitely blissful, you'll hear a lot of people say, but also bizarre. And the blissful part is how people feel when they're experiencing ASMR. So what they tend to feel is this deep feeling of relaxation with these pleasurable head tingles. And the way to describe it to someone who has never felt it and has no idea, it's almost like you're getting the world's best massage, but no one's touching you. And that's the bizarre part. The bizarre part, as you mentioned, is that you can just be watching a video on YouTube created by these ASMR artists, and you can just get this deep feeling of relaxation just suddenly wash over you with these pleasurable brain tingles. And also, as you said, what they're doing in these videos is also part of the bizarre part, because they're pretending to be clinicians or hairdressers or teachers or your best friend, or they're just reading softly to you from a phone book. And they've just really honed in on these triggers that relax our brains. And sure enough, what they're basically doing is simulating real world situations that involve positive personal attention, the kind you would get from a clinician, a teacher, a hairdresser.
Oh, what's the history of ASMR? How did this feeling get a name?
It got a name in 2010. Before 2010, it was mostly referred to as brain orgasm. And it still is referred to as brain orgasm by a lot of people. But there were a lot of people in the ASMR community who weren't comfortable calling it that. And it was kind of misleading because it led others to believe that it was the same as if you were having a real orgasm. And it's not that powerful. So it can be somewhat disappointing to others to describe it that way. But also it makes it uncomfortable to talk about. Why do you watch these videos? Oh, they give me a brain orgasm. So Jennifer Allen, who was a leader in several ASMR communities, she decided to sit down and come up with this more clinical sounding word, something that people would be comfortable with referring to. And so she came up with autonomous sensory meridian response. And myself, as a researcher and a scientist, I also really appreciate the name change, because I have to put together abstracts and submit papers to journals, and it gets a lot more serious attention from scientists when you have the words autonomous sensory meridian response in your proposal, in your paper, rather than brain orgasm.
When you talk about the scientific community, how long has this been considered a scientific phenomenon? I feel like when I first started hearing about it online, it was, and I go check on Wikipedia, it would say, there's no scientific literature on this.
Right.
I feel like that must have changed over the past few years.
Yep, you're exactly correct that you can read a lot of articles now and they'll say, oh, there's no scientific study. And that was true until 2015. And that's when the first peer-reviewed research study was published. Since then, there's been a total of 10. So that's a great rate. But when you look at science from total number of peer-reviewed publications for a topic, that is a drop in the bucket.
So why are people studying it? Why is ASMR useful?
The ASMR artists on YouTube, in a way, get the credit for really getting the attention of researchers. Because what happened was, basically in 2009, someone created the first whisper channel. And so people started tuning into that, saying, hey, this is great. It relaxes me. I'm going to start one too. And of course, that led to the phenomenon of ASMR videos on YouTube, where now there's thousands of channels, and each one of these channels has hundreds of videos. But they're growing so rapidly, and they have so many subscribers, because they're effectively helping people to de-stress and fall asleep more easily. And it's all those comments, along with all those subscribers, that is really catching the attention of researchers. I mean, that's what stood out to me, besides my personal experiences, where I definitely understand how it helps me, to see so many other people really getting so much benefit perks me up as a researcher saying, all right, let's put some numbers behind this, you know, some peer-reviewed research publications to kind of determine what exactly is going on here, or at least begin that journey to understanding it a lot better.
And can you tell me a little more about what you're doing at ASMR University?
I launched the website in 2014. And at that time, there was not any peer-reviewed research publications. So one of my major purposes was to put up some hypotheses of what could be happening in the biology of ASMR, to also put together, you know, what are the patterns and all these triggers that kind of make sense. And then I also reached out to Jennifer Allen, who was the woman that did coin the term ASMR in 2010. And she had also been leaning towards doing some research. So also reached out to another person that was on our early research team, Carissa Burnett. Us three got together, created a survey, and now posted that online. And so far, we've had over 26,000 participants in that survey. And so ASMR University is serving as a place for people to go see that survey, see where we're at with the development of that survey. And it's also a place where you can read about other people's research. So anytime there is a new peer-reviewed publication about ASMR, I write a summary of it, so it makes it a little more easy for others to read, along with a link to the full paper. So that way people can go to ASMR University, find out what is the latest research. But then I also link to interviews I've done with ASMR artists. Also, you might have been hearing a lot about celebrities making ASMR videos. I put those links on there. I think it's important to look at ASMR from all these different angles. Even though I'm a scientist and a researcher, that's only one angle that you can look at it. I think looking at it from and knowing what all the artists are doing can also inform a lot about ASMR. So ASMR University, the subtitle is The Art and Science of ASMR.
What celebrities have made ASMR videos?
Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec.
Hi. It's me, Aubrey Plaza.
Kate Hudson.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson. I'm here doing an ASMR for W Magazine, and I love W Magazine.
Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman.
Hello everyone, my name is Gal, and we're doing an ASMR interview for W Magazine.
And there's been probably about 40 others that I just can't recall. They're rappers, they're musicians, they're singer-songwriters, there's actors. A lot of people are just kind of doing it because it is growing in such popularity.
So all this makes me really jealous because I don't think I've ever experienced ASMR. What is your advice for people like me? Does it seem like everyone has the potential if they find the right trigger for it? Or is there a group of people, even in the U.S., who just don't seem to get that response?
Right. You're definitely correct that there's only a certain percent of people that are able to experience ASMR. No one has yet determined, and our survey can't determine that because it's not a random population sampling, but there is only a certain percent that seem to be able to. That percent could be around 20%. And that means there's a percent of people that definitely don't. But those people don't know that until they try a lot of ASMR videos and, of course, real-world ASMR experiences. What you have then also is then in the middle, which is in a way what you're addressing. Like the people who aren't sure yet, how can they find out? And some key things are go at it with an open mind. Some researchers have shown that if you don't think you'll experience it or you've heard negative things about ASMR videos, then you're less likely to experience ASMR. So there is an influence of expectancy that if you expect to experience it, you may. If you don't, then you may not. So going in with an open mind helps. Sampling a lot of ASMR videos will also help. If you picture all the videos, ASMR videos on YouTube, as a food buffet, you wouldn't walk up to a food buffet, take one food item, taste it. If you didn't like it, assume you didn't like all the food on the food buffet. So when you watch an ASMR video, and maybe that first one doesn't click for you, it doesn't do anything for you, keep sampling different artists because they all have their own style and they all have, for the most part, their own triggers that they may focus on. It might turn out this one artist who taps a lot doesn't do it for you, but someone else who whispers does, or someone else who crinkles does, or someone who does the teacher role plays. So it's just a matter of sampling widely. And then the other big advice I would give is don't do it at your office desk with your door open in bright fluorescent lighting with people walking by. Like you're going to be conscious that people in the videos are going to be speaking to you very softly. They're going to be whispering. It's going to feel intimate. So you're best off trying to experience ASMR for the first time in a setting you feel comfortable with having someone whisper to you and being able to focus on that and not worry that someone's going to walk by and see what's on your screen. So the right location and your mindset and just sampling lots of videos, all of those together can optimize you finding out if you do experience ASMR or you don't experience ASMR.
And so there are different kinds of triggers, right? There are auditory and visual and tactile triggers. What are some of the more common ones?
There's three main trigger types. There's visual, there's audio, and there's, as you said, tactile. For the visual, it's going to be what you see in the videos, which in a way isn't a lot. What you see is someone looking at you in a caring way. You're going to see slow, methodical, non-threatening hand movements. You're going to have a lot of eye contact. And so what you're just seeing is their disposition in a way. The auditory can be soft speaking, whispering. Whispering is probably the most popular auditory. There'll be crinkling objects very slowly and lightly, tapping on objects gently. You won't have the tactile experiences directly from the videos, of course. What you will see in the video is simulated touching. So they will, and this sometimes people need to be prepared for, is that the person in the video is not only going to be looking at you, making lots of eye contact, speaking to you in an intimate, personal way, but they're going to get very close to the camera a lot of times and pretend to touch your hair, pretend to clean your ears, pretend to give you a cranial nerve exam. And so being prepared for all that simulated tactile can help. In the real world, you can have that actual simulated, whether that's intentional or unintentional by the person doing it. Like a hairdresser, when they touch your hair, when they wash your hair, when they run their fingers through your hair just in the washing process, that is unintentional ASMR through tactile touching methods. But there are some places that exist. Whisper Lodge, which is a place that was co-founded by Melinda Lau. That's a place you can go and experience ASMR from expert ASMR practitioners. And so that's going to be very intentional types of whispering. They're going to have the dispositions. They're going to pretend to be clinicians and teachers. And they'll also be, with your approval, light touching.
Right now, since it sounds like, I mean, clearly this isn't something anyone needs to get a medical degree in or a license. What are some of the best ways to find a good ASMR practitioner, IRL?
You know, right now, the only service I know of that provides this intentional ASMR in-person IRL experience is Whisper Lodge. And Melinda also has, I think, a personal service. So that's more of, sometimes they call that an ASMR experience because it's very theatrical. There's different rooms that you go through and different people you work with. And she also can do some one-on-one ASMR. But beyond that, I don't think people have really gotten to that phase of starting that up. There's been spas that have reached out to me and they've said, you know, we've heard about this ASMR. We've been thinking about incorporating it. How would we do that? And so I try to give them tips on, well, you know, watch a lot of ASMR videos. Those people are experts. But then when you go to do that one-on-one with someone, be very conscious. It's not going to be as easy as it looks in those videos, because you're going to have to do things that they may not be doing in that video, like being conscious of the personal space, because now you're really with someone. So for seeking out real world, Whisper Lodge is the only service I know of, and I won't be surprised, or wouldn't be surprised, if in the next couple of years you do start seeing either these independent services pop up that offer expert ASMR practitioners, or incorporation of spas, yoga studios, health clinics, and things like that.
The podcast is an audio medium. Can you teach us some techniques that we could try in the studio right now to induce brain tingles in our listeners?
Well, the first one that would be the easiest would be whispering.
Okay. Nick.
Yeah. Okay. I think we have this part down, right?
Are we supposed to say something specific?
It doesn't matter what you say, as long as you whisper in the way that you would whisper if you were whispering to your best friend who's sitting right next to you.
Now, I don't think I experience ASMR, but there is something about being whispered to through a microphone that I appreciate, that feels nice, or just that I enjoy in the way that I might enjoy, like, a good song or something. Like, it just feels good. Obviously, that's not experiencing ASMR, but what is that? Is that on a continuum with, you know, the people that experience the brain tingles?
Yeah, you actually gave a really perfect example. You know, just picture any song that you enjoy. We enjoy that song. That's like a great song. It relaxes us. It makes us feel good. And there may be a moment in that song that gives you music chills. Have you had that before?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where there's a certain part of the song and you feel this emotional rise and your skin kind of gets the little bumps and your hair stand up. Have you had that before?
Totally.
Right. So that's music chills, technically also called frisson. And so that's how it is for ASMR, is that if you hear someone whisper, a lot of people are just generally relaxed. But some people feel this heightened relaxation with the brain tingles, which is different from goosebumps. It's not so much about getting the bumps and the hair raising, but you do get this pleasurable wave that's associated with it. That is more of a relaxing wave than an emotional wave. So you're right that there is a continuum. And some studies have shown this also. There was one study that had two groups of people. They determined group A experienced ASMR strongly, but group B did not experience ASMR. They had them both watch ASMR videos and they measured their heart rates. The people who experienced ASMR said they felt really relaxed, deeply relaxed, and their heart rates went down. The people who said they didn't experience ASMR before the study watched the ASMR videos. They still reported afterwards that they felt relaxed, but they didn't report as much relaxation as the other group. But also, their heart rates did go down also. So they were physiologically relaxed, but their heart rates did not go down as much as the ASMR group. So it's kind of exactly how you described it, that there are some people that are just, they find whispering relaxing. There's a lot of people that watch ASMR videos, not for these special brain tingles, but just because they enjoy them and they're relaxed by them. It's nice not to have someone shouting at you or, you know, doing something crazy with a skateboard that's all loud and clunky and bangy and someone gets hurt. Sometimes you're just in the mood to watch someone gently speak and softly fold a cloth napkin. You know, it just, sometimes we, our brain just wants that, wants to be relaxed in that way.
One of the things I've heard that gives some people the brain tingles is kind of the popping of a mouth close to a microphone, or the kind of clicking or the movement of saliva in the speaker's mouth, which sounds disgusting. But, and that, again, like, I kind of get that too. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So what you're referring to are mouth sounds. And typically and historically, mouth sounds are like the bane of audio recording. People don't want to get mouth sounds in their audio recording. So like radio personalities are always trained and the microphones are kind of kept at appropriate distance so you don't capture mouth sounds. But yet you're right. If you watch ASMR videos or you listen to ASMR podcasts, you're going to hear more mouth sounds because this is one of the ASMR triggers. When someone that you feel comfortable with getting very close to you and they're going to speak softly to you, they're going to be close to you. And so you're more likely to hear those mouth sounds. And that is associated with the relaxation. There is something similar in monkeys and non-human primates. It's called lip smacking. And this is something that's been published a lot about in research papers, that when non-human primates, I'll just use chimpanzees as an example. When chimpanzees approach each other, they purposely make mouth sounds called lip smacking to inform the other primate that they're not a threat. And as they get closer together, they then start grooming each other. So if you can visualize that classic animal documentary where they're showing, you know, a chimpanzee picking at the hair on the back of another chimpanzee and picking out bugs and twigs and things like that, you know, that animal grooming. Well, what I've just described right there is almost an ASMR video where someone's giving you personal focused attention that relaxes you, because you can see it on their whole, the way their body is and the way they look, that these chimpanzees that are being groomed are sitting very still and they're super relaxed. And then the other one is making occasional mouth sounds to indicate they're not being threatened. So we may just have this hard wiring that mouth sounds are relaxing, but yet there are some people that really don't like mouth sounds. But as I pointed out before, some of that can be expectation. Like if you go to play an audio recording for someone and you say, oh my God, I hate mouth sounds. Listen to this person speak, and you can hear all this saliva squishing around in their mouth. Oh, it's so nasty. Listen to this. You're probably not going to enjoy that. But if someone else presents that as, oh, listen to this soft voice. It's so gentle. And they either don't mention the mouth sounds or mention it in a positive light, then you may be more likely to have a positive experience with those mouth sounds. But initially, as you stated, is right. Some people hate mouth sounds. Some people love mouth sounds.
When I look around at ASMR videos, I notice it's a lot of women doing them, a lot of female voices. Are there any specific reasons? Has there been any research about why that is?
No one's done any peer-reviewed publications about why there are more female ASMR artists than male ASMR artists. Lots of hypotheses, and so it's not known which mm-hmm. of these is correct. But in summary, is it biological or is it cultural that females are making more of these videos? The biological argument, you know, would be that, well, women tend to be the primary caretakers of infants for a lot of species because they give the birth and there's more time spent between the mother and the infant. And that may be the core aspect of ASMR is the personal attention that you get from your parent to soothe you as an infant. The cultural is that, well, you know, culturally, a lot of cultures are more accepting of this motherly or parental type of behavior from a female than a male. So it just may be that females are more comfortable acting out that kind of parental caring role in a video than males. So the reasons are unknown, but it is clear there's a lot more female artists. But when you talk to people who enjoy ASMR, they usually will tell you they enjoy it just as much from males as females. And so there are a lot of ASMR, male ASMR artists who are also very popular, who have huge amounts of subscribers. And I think it's more so driven not by demand, but by the tendency of feeling comfortable making these videos. Is for whatever reason unknown, females do seem to be more comfortable just starting up these channels. And the very first ASMR artist was sure enough female, and the early ones were female.
Now, given how intimate it can be and how there's, I think for some people, a lot of an aura of awkwardness. Like you said, even watching an ASMR video in the office, you might be like, who's going to see I'm doing this? It's so embarrassing. Are there ways you suggest for friends to try out ASMR and kind of get over that initial awkwardness if they want to try it in real life?
Yeah, and that is really the focus of my book, Brain Tingles, is that teaching people how to do person-to-person, which is exactly what you described, person-to-person ASMR, so that way you could get together with a friend and you could have a purposeful, intentional ASMR session where you say, okay, you know, you enjoy ASMR, I enjoy ASMR, we both watch these videos. What would it be like if we tried to stimulate ASMR in each other? What if I whispered to you the way they whisper in the videos to me? What if I did play with your hair? And, you know, that might be something super strange. Well, it might be less strange if now you have the intention of, let's see if we can stimulate ASMR in each other. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tap this item in front of you, or I'm going to display it to you and talk about it softly the way they do it in ASMR videos. And for people to sit right, you know, face to face to each other and attempt this. And I'm sure it's happening here and there. I don't hear about it happening much. And so the book Brain Tingles is encouraging people to try that, to take what they're viewing in ASMR videos and try it in a real world experience, either with a friend or a spouse. You know, imagine your spouse or your partner comes home after work and, you know, they're stressed out. Well, maybe you do yoga, maybe you meditate, maybe you watch TV, or maybe you have an ASMR session. So now, you know, you sit down and you whisper to each other, you tap on something lightly. And because you both are taking it seriously, because even as I described it, it does sound awkward and silly. And I've written the whole book on it, and it's still, but people aren't doing it yet. And that's why it's awkward and silly. Imagine the first one to propose the idea of yoga. Move really slowly on a mat. You know, it's like, and then to show that to someone, be like, that seems a little bit strange. I really don't understand the purpose. But then once you start doing it, you're like, oh, all right, if you take it seriously, this really does work. And so other benefits, like you mentioned friends, and there's partners that could also do it, but infants and parents, or infants or children and their parents. My mother used to put me to sleep by lightly taking her finger and just touching the inside of my arm, just making slow, long strokes on the inside of my arm, because I was one of those kids who didn't go to bed easily. I remember always hating going to bed, being resistant. Craig, it's time to go to bed. I don't want to go to bed, you know, and fighting it. And then just lying in bed with my eyes wide open. And I'm sure my mother tried lots of things. I don't remember all the things that didn't work. All I remember is when she did light touching, which is total ASMR technique, and just lightly grazed it on the inside of my arm, it would zonk me out. And parents do try a lot of things to help, whether it's soothe an infant or put a child to sleep. But have they tried all these ASMR triggers that have been identified by these ASMR artists. Like, they're the early researchers. They've really identified all these things that relax people. Most parents know to whisper. What about tapping on something? What about crinkling something? What about lightly stroking the arm or lightly touching the back? That could be really helpful to parents. So I think there's a lot of ways it could be incorporated into real life, whether it's friends, family members, parents and children, or even into yoga studios and wellness centers.
I really like that. I feel like as someone who has not experienced ASMR yet, that makes a lot of sense to me, how parents treat their kids, especially young kids and babies. And it seems even like a very good practical application here for parents.
Yeah. And irony is, it makes sense because that's probably the origin of ASMR. Like, we've just taken it and turned mm-hmm. it, you know, gone 360 with it, full circle with it. Because imagine that you're an infant and you're born into the world. You feel a little bit cold, you feel a little bit hungry, you don't know who to trust, you know, you just, yeah, it's kind of a stressful place. So who do you trust? Who is able to soothe you? It's someone that speaks to you gently, touches you lightly, doesn't move in any threatening way, doesn't make threatening sounds. If you imagine what an infant sees and experiences when they're being held by a parent who's trying to soothe them, that visual is probably exactly what you see in an ASMR video when they get up close to the camera and they lower their voice and maybe they whisper and they try to soothe you and they pretend to touch your head. That's probably exactly how most parents are soothing infants. And so we just retain that. And so as adults, when we watch ASMR videos, we're just having that experience, not out of memory, but because we're hardwired to be relaxed by people who act in a non-threatening way, because that was the simple system we had from the day we were born to figure out who to trust. And our brain, our physiology, you know, we use the word trust, but trust is a concept that just means we feel relaxed. We don't feel threatened. And when we don't feel threatened, our body goes into the relaxation state. We're not preparing for fight or flight. We're not preparing for something dangerous happening. And so I think it's great that you saw that. Like, it, gosh, this makes a lot of sense for parents and infants, because that's probably why we are able to experience ASMR. That's our mechanism that we're born with from day one of, who do we trust? Who can relax us?
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hi, I'm Life Hacker health editor Beth Skorecki. And perhaps more importantly for this topic, I'm a mom of three kids, age 9, 6, and 3. Here are five ways you can stop a kid's temper tantrum. Step 1. Recognize that the tantrum is never about what it seems to be about. Sure, they're screaming that they need a marshmallow right now, but why do they suddenly need a marshmallow in the middle of an art museum? Most likely they're hungry, or they're tired, or they're just sick of being in a museum. And those are things you can fix. Kids have tantrums when they're stressed out and overwhelmed,
and they don't know how to deal with everything that's going on. Their mind grabs onto one little thing that they think will make them feel better. We adults do this too. Have you ever gotten upset over something tiny? Just because it happened at the end of a long, hard day? So, plan ahead. Bring snacks. Bring a stroller if they're going to get tired and need a nap. Watch the time to make sure you're not expecting perfect behavior from a toddler for hours on end. And watch your own stress level. If you're carrying 3 tote bags and chasing after multiple kids and trying not to be late to the next thing after this, and you're pregnant and your back is killing you, you're going to end up snapping at the kids and stressing them out even more. Anticipate your own needs, and you'll be better able to anticipate theirs. Step 2, don't escalate. A screaming match with a toddler is like a knife fight. If you're in one, you've already lost. By the time they're screaming, they are at maximum frustration, maximum anger, maximum fear. You cannot scare them into calming down. And when you put it that way, well, duh. They also can't process new information in this state, so it's not the time to threaten punishments or try to explain why we don't kick people. It's so tempting to want to yell at somebody when you're mad, but that's because it feels cathartic to you. It's not going to help your kid in any way. And if you're having your own little temper tantrum, you'll need to calm yourself down before you can calm down your child. So, be the grown-up. Take a deep breath. If you need your space, maybe count to 10, but don't just up and leave. They might get scared if they think you're abandoning them. You can say, I'm going to sit on this bench right here, make sure they hear you, and take a minute to wait it out. The nice thing about their frustration being at maximum level is there's nowhere to go but down. Tantrums tend to hit their peak pretty quickly. Step 3, decide what you're going to be firm on. Okay, so your kid's crying because you said she can't have ice cream. Is that no ice cream ever? No ice cream until after dinner? No ice cream while you're wearing your new dress that has to stay clean right now? Make sure you can articulate what you're actually saying no to. First, this helps you stick to your guns, so next time the kid doesn't think, Dad said no ice cream, so now I need to cry to change his mind. Second, you may have to compromise on something, so leave yourself that option. If your 3-year-old is on the floor screaming, and you've also got a baby with you, and a full cart of groceries, there's no way to scoop the kid up and make a clean exit. So, maybe you can talk them into a different snack, or say you'll buy the ice cream, but they don't get to eat it until later. Step 4, ask an irresistible question. When they take a breath between screams, whisper something to them. You can say, "Do you want to hear a secret?" I like to mention a toy or a character they normally cannot shut up about. What color dress does Princess Aurora wear? Or, who would win in a fight, Pikachu or the Ender Dragon? If you want to crank up the irresistibility, say something wrong. Pinkie Pie is the pony with rainbow hair, right? They might still be mad, but now they're mad about ponies. Once they respond, just follow it up with more questions, and pretty soon you're having a conversation instead of a tantrum. You can also try humor, and if you do, I recommend going as lowbrow as possible. If they do lean in because they want to hear a secret, the secret can just be poop. Step 5, find a resolution. Once the kid is starting to calm down, you can talk about what happened. This is where you explain why we don't hit brothers or whatever exactly went wrong. Our parenting editor, Michelle Wu, says she asks her 5-year-old to write a short letter about why she's mad. Michelle takes the dictation without adding commentary, and she says it helps her daughter feel like she's been heard. If you haven't been able to figure out yet what the tantrum was really about, you'll probably find out now. Maybe they were just hungry. Maybe they didn't get enough love and attention while you were dragging them around on errands all day. Listen thoughtfully during this conversation, and you may be able to stop the next tantrum before it starts.
And now it's time for the upgrade of the week. Every week we talk about one tiny thing that's making a big difference in our lives. This week it's just me and Melissa. Melissa, What's your upgrade this week?
So I was a victim of credit card theft or credit card number theft recently, and I had to get a new credit card and a new credit card number. I was not held responsible for the 900 Uber trips that someone took between like midnight Saturday and 6 a.m. Sunday. So I got a new credit card. And one of the things that I like about myself is a little hack that I established years ago, which is keeping a list of all the places where I auto pay with my credit card or have my credit card on file. Those places are fewer and fewer as I start to use Apple Pay, but my credit card is saved in certain apps or with the gas company. So I was able to take out my list and go through and check one by one the different purveyors and vendors and people I do business with where I had my credit card saved and update it with them. And also to add new sort of notations for myself, like you pay for Seamless with PayPal or you do this with Apple Pay, so you don't need to update that. And so I highly recommend that everybody keep a list of all the places that you are paying with your credit card so that should you have to get a new card and change all your numbers, you'll have a handy list and you won't be thinking like, oh no, I forgot that one place. Yeah,
that seems incredibly organized to me and intimidating and frightening.
I don't think you should be intimidated or frightened. This is well within your grasp.
Money issues intimidated, frightened me okay. In general. Yeah.
But another thing that I'm not sure, I haven't done it in a while, which is, you know, the exquisite pain of losing your wallet. Mm-hmm. I used to keep photocopies of everything in my wallet, or barring that, I mean, who keeps photocopies anymore? I used to keep dittos.
Your mimeographs. Yeah.
Keep a list of what's in your wallet, because worse than losing the wallet is like remembering that there was something in the wallet or forgetting, you know, what happened to that check that I was supposed to cash or whatever. Not that you're going to constantly be updating. I put a receipt in my wallet today.
50 cents in there today.
But maybe, you know, sometimes you're carrying a check around for a long time, or you have a specific receipt that you're holding on to for an expense report. Keeping track generally of what's in your wallet, I think, is a good idea because it's very helpful for when you lose it.
That's a really good idea. That's a life hack.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Alice, what's your upgrade this week?
So I'm planning a big trip, and this is my upgrade because I'm finding the planning to be as much fun as I think the actual trip is going to be. Mm-hmm. I've got a birthday coming up in the next year, as we all do.
Lucky.
Unlike everyone else, I have a birthday coming up. And it's a big birthday and a big wedding anniversary in the same week, basically. So we're sort of like, let's, you know, do it. We'll have fun. We'll pull out all the stops. We're going to Rome. And yeah, just planning the trip has been so much fun. And, you know, buying guidebooks and looking online and getting tips from friends and getting all the insider information. Plan a trip.
Any fun travel tips for us?
Not yet.
Okay.
Just planning.
Excellent.
Yeah. I could list tons of cool restaurants that look like they're going to be really fun, but it doesn't matter to you people. Unless you want to come to Rome with me.
Plan your trips.
Do you want to come?
Yes. Well, you know that I was planning on it.
Okay. So you'll be coming too.
Yep.
We're going to do the upgrade from Rome.
Yes, we will. The awesome threesome. You and me and Scott.
Yep. And Henry.
Oh, and Henry. Foursome.
Yep.
Fab four.
Yeah. Come.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Rachel Withers. Our executive director of audio is Mondana Mofidi. Our theme music is by Slowbiz, and Brad Fisher mixed the episode.
If you've got thoughts about The Upgrade or life in general, email us at upgrade@lifehacker.com or do something we only dare dream people will do and leave us a voice message at 347-687-8109.
Oh, we have some messages that I need to play for you.
What?
Yes, it's very exciting. People have been calling. You're very popular.
I didn't even know. Really?
Yes. We're going to have to get you your own line.
Okay.
Follow Lifehacker on Twitter @Lifehacker and on Facebook at facebook.com/Lifehacker. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.